Welcome back. You're at UBC and you're listening to AstroTalk with Marco and Adina Howard on CITR 101.9. Maybe this mic's better. Yeah, good. Thank you. Grabbed the wrong mic. Welcome. This is Marco. You listen to AstroTalk. And what's new in the world of space? Well, astronomy and space. I guess what I do notice is a lot of the shows, and I guess maybe the past 10 years, they're shows of doom. About Earth, that is. There's a dying Earth, and people are trying to escape the Earth. So Matt Damon's been in a couple of them. I've seen Elysium the other day with Jodie Foster, and she was great in it. And she was wickedly great. And there's all these scenarios of a dying Earth. It's an apocalyptic future. Wonder if that's going to come true. So in Elysium, they have a space station orbiting Earth that the privileged and the rich are living on, and life is good there, but on the Earth, things are bad. And this is a typical theme. So I'm wondering if this is really going to happen, if that's going to be our future. But I just noticed there's lots of shows like that. So Star Wars is still captivating everybody. There's a new Star Wars coming out. So we're all still interested in space, and I see a lot of people, a lot of young kids wearing NASA shirts, which is very cool. So what am I going to talk about today? Let's see. There's always stuff about clues about the early solar system. So here's one. Ice fossils in an ancient space rock reveal clues about the early solar system. And I'm thinking, well, okay, it's cool. You know, let's learn about the early solar system. But I've said this a few times before. How practical is that? We're studying about the early universe. And I don't mean to minimize the great work a lot of the great scientists are doing. But there's a lot of effort spent on, well, let's discover something about the early solar system or the early universe. And maybe we can divert our money now to living in outer space, because that would be the best thing, I think, for all of us. Because we are a spacefaring race, and we're probably destined to live in outer space. And who knows what's going to happen with the Earth. So Venus may be sinking. Jakarta, I read an article, in 30 years it'll be underwater. I think the highest point in Florida is 254 feet. I could be wrong, but it's not very high. A lot of it is sea level, or close to sea level. Is Florida going to go under? So we have to think about going into outer space. And I guess we're destined because we are a curious race, aren't we? Humans are a curious race. So here, I'll read a bit about this, but in a way, I'm thinking, let's skip these, but I'll read the first few paragraphs about ice fossils in ancient space rock revealed clue about the early solar system. So this is on livescience.com. Dated 3 days ago. So they don't put the date, they just say 3 days ago. So I assume it would be the 25th. An artist's illustration shows the water snow line spot around the young star V883 Orionis. In a new study, researchers have discovered ice fossils in an ancient meteor, which shows how objects that formed with ice beyond the snow line in the early solar system moved towards the sun, leaving behind these porous fossils. So the scientists analyzed a 4.6 billion year old primitive meteor called ACFER, so ACFER 094, that crash landed in the Sahara Desert in Algeria in 1990. A primitive meteor is a rocky remnant of the solar nebula. So let's skip this article because basically they're going to say something about the early solar system and a lot of it's speculation anyway. Let's go something cooler. There's a violent battle between two solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. Now that's practical, isn't it? Imagine if we have two solar winds and cosmic rays and we got to go through it. Well, Voyager just paved the way. So let's read about this. This is in Live Science. It's 6 days ago, so I assume it is November 22nd, and it says, there's a violent battle between solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. Wonder why Voyager 1 didn't pass through it. So here is a illustration. Enclosed in a bubble of solar wind called the heliosphere, our solar system is relatively safe from the ravages of cosmic rays flying through interstellar space. So here's the first, that was the caption under the picture. And now it says, at the edge of our solar system, a fierce battle rages between solar wind and interstellar rays. NASA's Voyager 2 spacecraft has now passed through the front lines. Solar wind is not exactly our friend. The flood of hot electric particles constantly gushing out of the sun bathes the entire solar system in radiation, frying the occasional satellite and making life impossible on any planet not shielded by an atmosphere. In both a literal and figurative sense, the solar wind blows, but as new observations from the edge of our solar system suggest, it also protects everything it touches from the even more damaging forces of interstellar space. So I guess that's one thing to consider. If there are going to be habitats on Mars and Moon, somehow probably we have to just like, what's that guy named? Pauly Shore on Biodome. I think that's the name of the show. That crazy, fun-loving guy, Pauly Shore. I think he went inside a biodome for a year or two. So we're going to probably have to live inside a biodome if we do. And it's great to talk about this, but man, why don't they make it happen? I think it would be the best thing to try to live on another planet or a moon or something. And as we all know, maybe in 100 years we have to. At least that's what Stephen Hawking thought. So he said, we've probably got 100 years on Earth, so it might be true. As a solar wind flows outward for billions of miles in every direction, it creates a bubble of energy that surrounds our entire solar system. And this kind of reminds me, I think a galactic year is how long it takes for our Milky Way to, or our, sorry, our solar system to travel around the center of the galaxy. So I think it takes 240 million years as a galactic year. So apparently it doesn't go on a straight line on Earth. It goes up and down. It kind of bobbles, it oscillates. And there are theories out there, I think, that as it bobbles up and down, it will bobble up and it will emerge out of the protective, maybe magnetic field of our galaxy. So basically, our Milky Way travels around the center of our galaxy, takes 250 million years, 240, and when it goes around once, that's a galactic year. So as it goes around, it doesn't go straight, it bobbles up and down. So there's speculation or there's a theory that probably some ice ages or some extinction periods occurred just when our solar system bobbled up out from the protected cloud of our galaxy, and then that's when it's vulnerable. So this is, our Earth is protected from the solar wind and cosmic rays from our Earth is protected from the atmosphere and our magnetosphere, and our solar system is protected by the heliosphere, the edge of the sun's empire. it protects us from cosmic rays. So what could happen is every once in a while, bobbling up and down, traveling up and down like a wave, our solar system travels up and it emerges out of the protective bubble of our galaxy. So that's a cool theory. I read it somewhere a couple years ago. So that might happen. But anyway, here we are talking about our solar wind and all the protection our planet offers. And if it were to be a possibility to go live in another planet, then we'd have to somehow protect ourselves because Mars and Moon don't have much of an atmosphere. So spacesuits would probably be mandatory outside. And like Pauly Shore, my good buddy, that funny guy, some people think he's crazy, but he lived in a biodome. So it's possible in Mars, as we see in, what's that one with Arnold Schwarzenegger when he goes, Total Recall, he goes to Mars. Everybody lives inside, protected from the atmosphere or the lack of atmosphere of Mars. So all the cosmic rays, all the radiation from the sun, all the solar wind would damage us. We couldn't live there. So this is a cool thing because here we're seeing a violent battle between solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. So I'm going to go back to the article. Sorry I digress so much, but sometimes you got to talk, go on and on, blah, 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 talk stuff that seems cool. Might be nonsense. It might not. So anyway, as the solar wind flows outward for billions of miles in every direction, it creates a bubble of energy that surrounds our entire solar system. At the edge of this bubble, where the solar wind finally collides with powerful cosmic rays beaming through interstellar space, there is a hot, thick wall of plasma called the heliopause. I guess the heliopause is the edge of our solar system. This cosmic border sits about 120 times farther from the sun than Earth does, where it helps deflect and dilute the powerful radiation released by distant stars and celestial explosions. So believe me, it's a dangerous world out there. When you leave our solar system, there are cosmic rays and all kinds of powerful radiation coming at you. But as we know, there's stuff coming at us from Earth, from the solar wind. So in a way, the solar wind does a good thing. It forms a bubble around our solar system. But then also, it could destroy life on Earth, all the life. So we're lucky we have an atmosphere and a magnetosphere. Or is it magnetosphere? I'm not sure. But anyway, we have a cosmic border called the heliopause. And the heliopause protects us from cosmic rays and powerful radiation released by distant stars and celestial explosions. So that's one of the things I love about this site, Life Science. It says related, spaced out, 101 astronomy images that will blow your mind. So remember, this article says there's a violent battle between solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. So if you want to go to this article, it's dated, says 6 days ago. And as I said, there's a little link here, related, spaced out, astronomy images that will blow your mind. And Hubble has done that over and over again. So as we know, astronomy images are amongst the most beautiful images you can get in the universe. Now, in a series of studies published November 4th in the journal Nature Astronomy, astronomers directly analyzed this cosmic frontier for the first time, using data collected by NASA's Voyager 2 spacecraft, which passed through the heliopause in interstellar space a year ago. So I guess Voyager 1 paved the way quite a few years ago, and now Voyager 2 is doing its job, and maybe some of the stuff that Voyager 2 is looking at, Voyager 1 looked at it first, because Voyager 1 passed out of the passed through the heliopause maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago. So now let's see. While Voyager 2 was able to cruise seamlessly through the heliopause in about a day, Researchers found that the plasma barrier was significantly hotter and thicker than previous studies estimated, effectively forming a physical shield between our solar system and interstellar space, according to study co-author Edward Stone, a very famous guy, an astronomer at the California Institute of Technology, who has worked on the Voyager program since it launched in 1977. This shield stops about 70% of cosmic radiation from breaking into our solar system. So says the great professor Dr. Stone, and quote, the heliopause is the contact surface where two winds collide, the wind from the sun and the wind from space, which comes from supernova that exploded millions of years ago. Only about 30% of what's outside the bubble can get in, end quote. So still what kind of amazes me, not kind of, it does amaze me, is that here we have two spacecraft. They're really far away from us now. They're out of the solar system, and I believe they have the power, they send their signals, is maybe the power of a refrigerator light bulb divided by 10 million or 10 billion. So it's very weak signals, and they can still receive the signals and send signals out to the spacecraft what to measure. It's really amazing, because I don't know how many days or hours or how long it takes for the signal to get there, but it's very weak. It's hard to capture. I believe they capture it through the Deep Space Network. And as I said, there's nothing more to say except amazing science. Here they are, like, so far away, and the signal is so weak, and they're still able to do this kind of groundbreaking research. So it is important, because 70% of the cosmic radiation from breaking into our solar system is stopped by this heliopause. So I think I lucked out. I think this is a wonderful article, and I'll get into it more, but first I'm going to take a break. I'm going to listen to Rohit rapping, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about this cool topic. So I think it's cool. Solar wind, cosmic radiation colliding at the heliopause. And again, these are the first spacecraft that have been, I think I'll talk more about, I think they're the, I'm not sure the name, but I'll talk more about this when I come back. So this is Marco. You are listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Say, baby. Don't get in no trouble.
No, we're just trying to win this dance.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astro Talk.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Robert Devin in the club, Y Clef Jean.
Look at here, look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her, buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another 1/2 hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Check the spelling R-E-F-U-G-E. E, get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad because you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
In Trinidad with attorneys, ooh, yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Whip to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a nuisance, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got juice, told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survived. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive.
Refugee camp, nice, baby. You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
Hi, are you here for Pride Night?
Yes, thanks for asking.
Pride Night runs on the fourth Wednesday of every month from 6:15 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Drop by at the Bike Kitchen, located in room 36 in the UBC Life Building.
Bring your own bike and fix it with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or just come hang out with other community members and eat some free pizza.
Beginners are always welcome.
Take up space in a shop and learn in a space facilitated by queer mechanics and volunteers.
Feeling a bit crazy, or is your vision getting a little bit hazy? Or if you're feeling a bit funny, get your friends and listen to CITR 101.9 on Astro Talk with Marco at UBC. Depend on Marco for the latest in astronomy news at CITR's Astro Talk. Get a lot smarter now by listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Hello, welcome back. This is Marco talking about our friends. Are your friends going to let you down or are they going to be around? We'll see. Anyway, there's an illustration here. I am talking about the Voyager 2 spacecraft. It's looking at a violent battle between solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. So make no mistake about it, the universe is an extremely violent place. So we see here at the heliopause, at the edge of our solar system, there's a violent battle between the solar wind and cosmic rays. And imagine how much every second the sun reacts, 600 million tons of hydrogen every second. Imagine the energy, how violent that is. Then we have supernova explosion. We have black holes, and then we have neutron stars colliding and all kinds of, wow, violent, amazing stuff, I guess. I don't know, is violent stuff amazing? But when it's astronomy, it is. But the universe is a violent place. So if we were just to, let's say, if we had could magically go to Mars now, if we didn't have a spacesuit, if we didn't live in a biodome, we'd be cooked, or we'd be out of it. We'd be dead pretty soon. So anyway, the universe is a violent place. So that's a good thing to think about when looking at this article. There's a violent battle between the solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it. So interstellar robots phone home. Wow, that's cool. Interstellar robots phone home, like ET phone home. In November 2018, NASA's Voyager 2 satellite passed through the heliopause. So why it's a satellite and not a spacecraft? I really don't know. Becoming only the second man-made object in history to leave our solar system. So what happened before the Voyagers went? I believe they sent two spacecraft called Pathfinders, because at that time in 1977, the outer planets, the four giant planets, were aligned. So this was a perfect time to send spacecrafts through, get slingshotted from one planet to the next, and they'd be much closer. But I believe the Pathfinders blazed the path. That's why they were called Pathfinders. So I believe that the scientists at that time were unsure of, I don't know if Hubble existed then. I don't think it did. But they weren't sure how thick the asteroid belt was. Would it destroy any object going through it? And they found out, no, it wouldn't. But I believe it was the Pathfinder spacecraft that found this stuff out. Okay, so the satellite's twin, so satellite Voyager 2 is the first one. Second one that passed through the heliopause, the satellite's twin, Voyager 1, became the first in August 2012. However, Voyager 1 was unable to analyze the border properly due to a sensor malfunction. So, as I understand it, that to conserve power and maybe for other reasons, some of the instruments were turned off or couldn't be used anymore. So, so that's why Voyager 1 didn't analyze it, because there was a malfunction in a sensor. So sensor malfunction. So imagine they're way out there now, very far away, 120 times farther than the sun is from the Earth. And their signals take a long time to get to Earth. And then I think it takes about eight minutes or nine minutes for the for light to travel from the sun to the Earth. So if Voyagers are 120 times farther, then it would take about 1,000 minutes. So I don't know how many hours that is, about 16 hours. And that signal is very faint. So that's just a feat of science, I think, that they are able to send their signals that far and to still do research. But anyway, here goes, back to the article. According to radiation data collected by Voyager 2 on its interstellar journey, temperatures in the heliopause reached up to 89,000 degrees Fahrenheit or 31,000 degrees Celsius, roughly double the temperature that previous astronomical models predicted, suggesting a far more violent clash between the solar wind and cosmic rays than scientists ever predicted. So for scientists to predict it in the first place, to me, is quite amazing that something is so far, it's 120 times farther than the Earth is from the sun, and they still have models that predict these things. The only thing is, they didn't predict it would be as violent as it is. While the heliopause's hot, thick wall of plasma protects our solar system from most of the harmful rays darting through space, the researchers also found that the boundaries of the heliopause are not quite as uniform as anticipated. The edge of the heliopause is not a perfect bubble after all, but contains porous holes that allow interstellar radiation to leak in at certain points. Voyager. So this just made me think, imagine we're quite far out, I think in the Orion arm, maybe two-thirds out from the center of the galaxy. And imagine solar systems that are closer in, with very close to other star systems, close to supernova, close to neutron stars, close to the black hole, just the density of the stars in there, the star field. Wow. Imagine how violent it gets there. Okay, so Voyager 2 data detected two such holes on our side of the heliopause where radiation levels spiked much higher than normal background levels before dropping back down again. Eventually, when the levels of cosmic radiation skyrocketed and stayed that way, it was clear that the Voyager 2 had entered a new region of space beyond our sun's domain. So it is out of our sun's domain. Wow. And Voyager 1 left it 7 years ago. So The sheath of hot, charged wind protecting our solar system might not be perfect, and it still might not be our friend, as Voyager 2 confirmed. It is part of what separates our cozy cosmic home from the ferocious wilderness of space. For that, perhaps, we should be thankful. So there is a ferocious wilderness in outer space. So I thought that was a very cool article. And here it says, there are thousands of tardigrades on the moon. Now what might it mean for the moon to have thousands of tardigrades as a new inhabitant? Well, I'll look at that in a second. So anyway, that's a cool article. It shows that the how violent outer space can be, and how we have beautiful air we can breathe. And for now, anyway, I don't know how much longer. We have seas, we have animals, we have human beings and plants. So we have a nice, peaceful world. Apparently, we think, some of us don't think it's very peaceful, but compared to outer space, it is very peaceful. So there's a violent world out there. So that was a good article, I thought. Okay, now here is another article. Maybe you guys can look at it if you want, you one or two guys listening. There's something called the Galactic Easter Egg. What's a Galactic Easter Egg? It's part of 101 astronomy images that will blow your mind. It's on livescience.com, and it's under amazing astronomy images on the Live Science website. So the giant seahorse, colorful Venus, a cloudy space mystery, a galactic Easter egg, view from another world, feeding the beast, scars on Mars, merging galaxies form cosmic exclamation. It looks like an exclamation mark. Wow. And far side of the moon. So I think that would be a good thing to go to if you're interested in looking beautiful images. It's on livescience.com. 101 astronomy images that will blow your mind. So what's a tardigrade? I want to see what a tardigrade. Dehydrated tardigrades that crash landed the moon in April won't come back to lifetime anytime soon. Tardigrades, which live on every continent on Earth, are also maybe living on the moon following the crash of a lunar lander carrying thousands of the microscopic water bears. Did any of them survive the impact? If they did, what happens to them now? So there's tardigrades on Earth, or on the moon. Wow. Okay, so you know what I might do now? I'm thinking about going for a nice little break. And when I come back, then I'm going to talk more about tardigrades and other cool stuff. So this is Marco. You are listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had everything. Talking about boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC. Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My people singing, let me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, and don't stop, we won't stop. Stop, ride or die. That's why I put it down for the west side.
It seemed that long ago.
Oh no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick was the sh- had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown.
We had to burn this bitch on down. Was in incarceration.
I blaze a dime with you for having lots of patience.
Times for my sisters at the county build.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my dad that passed away.
I took some
everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is west side till I die.
Where you at? Throw your gloves in the air.
Wave them like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say?
All day, every day.
Any damn day.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Send me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper gal just a wine and a oil up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money
dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. Like you mean it, shorty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both. They got me looking at you, looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, girl, wind and pop it. Yeah, yeah. Bumper that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it, so when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's singing.
You're listening to Mayo on CITR 101.9 on Marco's AstroTalk. Push back.
Chasing my booty amazing. Come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time, I wanted him pop it.
You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Marco and Sugar. Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk. And let's see, what am I going to talk about now? I'm going to talk about some music. No, I'm going to talk about physicists. Oh, here, I have a choice. Physicists have finally seen traces of a long-sought particle. Here's why that's a big deal. It was predicted four decades ago, but only found now. Scientists have finally found traces of the axion, an elusive particle that rarely interacts with normal matter. The axion was first predicted over 40 years ago, but has never been seen until now. So this is on livescience.com. It says 6 days ago. It says physicists have finally seen traces of a long-sought particle. Here's why that's a big deal. Scientists have suggested that dark matter, the invisible matter that permeates our universe, may be made of axions. But rather than finding a dark matter axion deep in outer space, researchers have discovered mathematical signature of an axon in an exotic material here on Earth. Wow, let's see what it's kind of interesting. The newly discovered axion isn't quite a particle as we normally think of it. It acts as a wave of electrons in a super cool material known as a semi-metal. But the discovery could be the first step in addressing one of the major unsolved problems in particle physics. Wow. Okay, here's a related topic, why I love astronomy, livescience.com. It says, related, the 18 biggest unsolved mysteries in physics. Wow, that's pretty cool. The axion is a candidate for dark matter since, just like dark matter, it can't really interact with regular matter. This aloofness also makes the axion, if it exists, extremely difficult to detect. This strange particle could also help solve a long-standing conundrum in physics known as the strong CP problem. I've never heard about that. For some reason, the laws of physics seem to act the same on particles and their antimatter partners, even when their spatial coordinates are inverted. I didn't know that. I don't know why I would know that, but anyway. This phenomena is known as charge perisymmetry, but existing physics theory says there's no reason this symmetry has to exist. So let's read that again. For some reason, the laws of physics seem to act the same on particles and their antimatter particles, even when their spatial coordinates are inverted. So, big deal. What's the big deal about that? The unexpected symmetry can be explained by the existence of a special field. Detecting an axion would prove that this field exists, solving this mystery. Still above my head, but I'll read on. Anyway, there's a certain field that has to exist around the axion. If you find a field, that means axions exist. I guess that's what it means, okay. Because scientists believe that the ghostly neutral particle barely interacts with ordinary matter, they have assumed that it would be hard to detect using existing space telescopes. So the researchers decided to try something more down to Earth, using a strange material known as condensed matter. Condensed matter experiments have been used to find elusive predicted particles in several known cases, including that of the Majorana fermion. So I think a Majorana particle is the exact opposite of it, or it's like it, but it, anyway, okay. The particles are not detected in the usual sense, but are instead found as collective vibrations of materials that behave and respond exactly as the particle work. So now I'm going to try to see, I'm going to read about this Majorana particle. Where is it? Majorana, because I knew what it was before. Okay, a Majorana particle is a particle that is its own antiparticle. Okay, now that's all cleared up. We can breathe easy. Johannes Guth, a physicist at the Max Planck Institute for Chemical Physics of Solids in Germany, and quote, "The problem with looking at outer space is that you cannot control your experimental environment very well. You wait for an event to happen and try to detect it. I think one of the beautiful things of getting these concepts of high engineering physics into condensed matter is that you can actually do much more." End quote. The research team worked with a WEYL, so a WEYL semi-metal, a special and strange material in which electrons behave as if they have no mass, don't interact with each other, and are split into two types, right-handed and left-handed. The property of being right-handed or left-handed is called chirality. Chirality in WEYL and while sentimentals is conserved, meaning there are equal numbers of right and left-handed electrons, cooling the semi-metal to 12 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 11 degrees Celsius allows electrons to interact and condense themselves into crystal of their own. So I don't know what I'm getting out of this. I don't know what you'll... I'll read a bit more, but waves of vibrations traveling through through crystals are called phonons. Since the strange laws of quantum mechanics dictate that particles can also behave as waves, there are certain phonons that have the same properties as common quantum particles, such as electrons and photons. Guth and his colleagues observed phonons in the electron crystal that responded to electrical and magnetic fields, exactly like the axions are predicted to. These quasi-particles also did not have These quasi-particles also did not have equal numbers of right and left-handed particles. So, you know what? This article has kind of goes on, and it assumes that you are as smart as some of the people in the physics building right now. So I'm going to go on to the next article and talk about, should I talk about your RNA may have come from space, meteor studies suggest, or Jupiter's great storm isn't dying anytime soon? Oh, look at this. This is a cool one. Look at this. Three black holes possibly seen cooking their galaxies alive. Now, wouldn't it be cool if a black hole cooked a galaxy? Well, not us. It wouldn't be cool for us. So this is on livescience.com 3 days ago, and it says, without the turbulence, the galaxies would die in just a few billion years. Oh, just a few billion years. So let's see what's happening here. Three black holes possibly seen cooking their galaxies alive. Supermassive black hole at the heart of galaxies may be blasting hot, turbulent waves of gas through the cosmos, keeping galaxy clusters alive with their heat. And for the first time, astrophysicists believe they've seen that turbulence in action. Peer into a massive galaxy cluster, which I do regularly. Like right now, I'm just going to look out the window and peer into a massive galaxy cluster. And you'll see hot gas swirling in its core, filling the space between stars and galaxies. But there's a mystery about this gas. How does it stay so hot? See, one thing that automatically rings a bell with me is a black hole's blasting matter out, but it's supposed to suck matter in. So here they're saying this black hole is blasting matter out. Okay, let's see what it says. Peer into the massive cluster and you'll see hot gas swirling its core, filling the space between stars and galaxies. But there's a mystery about this gas. How does it stay so hot? Simple models suggest it should lose energy much faster than it does, and that gravity should start to bind the whole cloud together into stars within a billion years of forming. Those stars would, in turn, burn out, and the galaxy would die then. Astrophysicists call this process catastrophic cooling, but this doesn't happen. Okay, catastrophic cooling doesn't happen. Turns out, back in 2005, researchers found a partial explanation for why not. They found bubbles forming within those dense gas clouds, giant cavities in space, some as large as the Milky Way. These giant bubbles were moving away from the supermassive black holes at the galactic centers, and in turn, researchers wrote, seemed to prevent catastrophic cooling. Okay, catastrophic cooling is prevented. Now we are in a safer world. But the question remained, how does all that energy transfer into the gas around the bubbles? Exactly what I thought. In a new paper published to the ARXIV database November 18th, researchers report evidence of turbulence around the bubbles, swirls and eddies that spin off smaller swirls and eddies, which spin off smaller swirls still. Over time, the theory goes that chaotic behavior reaches the microscopic level where it dissipates as heat. So says Yuan Li, an astrophysicist, University of California, Berkeley, and quote, you can picture the bubble as a spoon that's stirring the hot tea, end quote. Okay. The spoon creates a bulk motion of the tea, but pull on the spoon and you'll notice smaller swirls forming the liquid, which create even smaller eddies. When the eddies stop spinning, it's because their energy is converted into heat, she said. In a mug on your table, the heating isn't very dramatic. You'd struggle to boil water just by stirring it. but the energy of the bubbles moving through space is much more intense, and it seems like turbulence converts a significant fraction of it from kinetic energy to heat. Okay, so what's happened these past two articles? It's getting past my realm of knowledge. I don't understand what they're saying. So basically they're saying three black holes possibly seen cooking their galaxies alive. So I'll end it there. Okay, so why not do this one? This is very cool. There might, no. Okay, here's one. Your RNA may have come from space, meteor studies suggest. The discovery of ribose sugar in ancient meteorites just made space rocks a little sweeter. Very cool. Okay, this is 7 days ago on livescience.com, and the article is, your RNA may have come from space, meteor studies suggest. A new study suggests that when some ancient meteorites cross land on Earth, they bring a dash of extraterrestrial sugar with them. Good for our coffee, anyway. To be clear, this is not table sugar. Sadly, scientists have no insight into whether aliens prefer their coffee black or sweetened. Good. Rather, in the powdered samples of two ancient carbon-filled meteorites, astronomers have found traces of several sugars that are key to life, including ribose, the sugar base of RNA, ribonucleic acid. According to lead study author Yoshihiro Furukawa, this is the first time that these bioessential sugars have been detected in meteorites. This find gives fresh fuel to the idea that the essential building blocks of life on Earth were forged in space before cross-landing on our young planet billions of years ago, Furukawa said. So we come from riboflavored meteorites. Now, isn't that cool? So says Professor Furukawa, and quote, other important building blocks of life have been found in meteorites previously, including amino acids, components of proteins, and nucleobases, which are components of DNA and RNA. But sugars have been a missing piece. So in the new study, Furukawa and his colleagues analyzed powder collected from two ancient meteorites, the Murchison meteorite, which fell near Murchison, Australia, in 1969, and meteorite NWA-801, which was discovered in Morocco in 2001. Both space rocks are believed to be older than Earth itself, more than 4.5 billion years old, and have been shown in previous studies to carry organic matter, including amino acids. So I guess it harkens back to one question that I was hit with years ago, is where did the water come from on Earth? Did it come from meteors or asteroids? And here it's saying that a meteor brought the RNA that is in our body came from a meteor. And we know that when there's a supernova explodes, it shoots out all these minerals and all these chemicals and all these elements, and or actually stardust or nuclear waste, however you want to look at it. We're the waste from a supernova explosion, so that's what we're made of. So this article is saying that some kind of meteorites have this ribose sugar, and it could form the basis of what we're all about, our RNA, which is pretty cool, isn't it? So one last article I want to look at. There, it was one I wanted to look at the beginning, but I'll look at it now. There might be cracks in the universe, but we can't see them from Earth. The cracks, if they exist, are old remnants of a time shortly after the Big Bang. So this is on livescience.com. Again, the article is called There Might Be Cracks in the Universe, but we can't see them from Earth. So there might be cracks in space-time, but humanity's telescopes can't see them. The cracks, if they exist, are old remnants of a time shortly after the Big Bang, when the universe had just shifted from a hotter, more alien state to the cooler, more familiar one we see today. That great cool-down, which physicists called a phase transition, started earlier in some places than others, the theory goes. Bubbles of our cooler, you know what, I read that too fast, I'm going to read it again. There might be cracks in space-time, but we can't see them. The cracks, if they exist, are old, remnants of a time shortly after the Big Bang, when the universe just shifted from a hotter, more alien state to the cooler, more familiar one we see today. That great cool-down, which physicists call a phase transition, started earlier in some places than others, the theory goes. Bubbles of cooler universe formed and spread, blooming across space until they met other bubbles. Eventually, all of space transitioned and the old universe disappear. So imagine the billions and trillions of things that had to happen for life to exist on Earth as it did. All these mere coincidences and all these things, if any of them didn't happen, we wouldn't be here. So, but that old high energy state might have lived on at the borders between the bubbles, cracks in the fabric of space-time where those cooling regions met and didn't perfectly fit together. Some physicists thought we might still see evidence of those cracks or defects known as cosmic strings in the cosmic microwave background, the heat left over from the universe's violent emergence. But according to a new paper, the evidence would simply be too faint for any telescope to ever pick out the noise. So I think I'm going to call it a day. So there's cracks in the universes, but we can't see them. So I was just going to end with something, and it was, and then it just slipped my mind. What was I going to end with? I forget. Let's see. Was I going to talk about cracks in the universe? I don't remember. But anyway, thank you for listening today. The universe is one big cool place, but as we learned today, it is also a violent place. So careful when you're traveling around the universe, because you might just slip past the black hole or something weird that'll singe you or boil you to billions of degrees or blow you out of the sky. So thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Bye.